So we work a lot. Maybe you saw a recent news release that says that the average American work week is now just under 50 hours on average. So Americans work more and typically have less vacation than anybody else in all the industrialized world. And since we typically start working in our teens and usually don't retire until our 70s, much of life is spent working. And as Christians, that is significant. Significant because other than the home, our workplace is where we live out our Christian faith. If, for example, you spend 50 hours of the 168 per week at work, that is about 30% of every week that's spent on the job. By contrast, if you spend 3 hours at church, which is about what the service is, no, we won't do that, that comes out to 1.7% of the work week. So our jobs are a significant part of our lives and our Christian faith. But let's do a survey. Let's find out who does what here, all right? How many of you are self-employed? Wow. A lot of bosses here. All right. How many of you work in a medical field? A doctor, a nurse, a technician, a therapist? All right. How about in a legal field? So like a lawyer or a judge or a paralegal or... Okay, any of you sitting next to each other, you may want to look around and, you know, engage each other's services. How about in education? Teachers? Wow, a lot of teachers. All right. How about retirees? All right, students, finance, money people, raise your hand. All right, what are some other categories? You have construction. How about construction? All right, some other ideas? What are some categories? Sales. I was on the top of my list and I forgot sales. How many are in sales? All right, you get together with the finance people and you can work everything out here and have construction done. Another field? Homemakers. How many homemakers? All right, you may be leading the list. You're right up there with retirees, I think was. Okay, another category? Service. That's me. This is a service. All right. Engineering or related fields, an engineering company. How about government? How many work for the government? Okay. Have I got it all? What is it? Military. You're all away. Is military. There's a number of people that are military. All right. We've covered it all. What was it? Farmers. How many farmers? You're pretty well concentrated down here in the front, aren't you? All right. Now, that's what we do. The question is why we do it. And that's a totally different category. So if you inherit a lot of money, or if you win the lottery, or get an unexpected large judgment from some court case settlement, and one of the first questions that you're asked by coworkers as well as distant cousins is, when are you going to quit your job? And if your instant answer is now, then you know that one of the main reasons that you work is for the money. Because if you have the money and you don't need to go to work, then you've established that as the reason. And money is certainly one of the reasons why we work. But as Christians, we really need to have some bigger and better answers to that question. And first and most of all is that we work to be like God. Because we were created, we were designed by God to be like Him. And the best of the best is that we follow that design. The best of the best in terms of fulfillment is that we be like Him, and God is a worker. And not for the money. God does not need the money. It's just in Him. It's just who God is. You know the creation story in the beginning of the Bible, Genesis chapters 1 through 3, how God got this idea ideas of the heavens and the earth, and in 6 days went from the drawing board to reality. And then, as we often emphasize, had a seventh day of rest. But of course, he worked hard and accomplished a great deal in those 6 days of creativity and hard work. And that wasn't all. He wasn't finished. It wasn't as if he quit then working. He was not one of those types of people, hey, you know the type, the person that your company that says, I like to start things. I just don't like to maintain them. Be grateful. God doesn't feel that way. God not only created the world in which we live, but he sustains it as well. St. Paul wrote in Colossians 1, 16 and 17, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. You ever feel that way? You ever feel that at your business, if you left, the whole thing would fall apart? You ever think that at home? That if one morning you just stayed in bed, the family would never work? That you hold everything together? Good for you. You're a lot like God. He feels exactly the same way. God not only created our world, but he's the one that holds it together. So every day that we go to work, every day we do something that is good, every day that we create, every day that we sustain what we have made, we are like God. God works. We work. And that's good for God, and that's good for us. But that's not the only reason. There are many reasons that we work, including to glorify God. To glorify God is to make him look good. It's boosting his reputation in a world where his reputation is frequently tarnished. And perhaps nowhere more than in the city of Corinth. If you go today as a tourist to Greece, you will no doubt go to the capital city of Athens, and you will be offered a tour bus excursion to Corinth. It's not terribly far away, and there you can visit the remains of this ancient city. It was an astonishing place of sexual immorality and drunkenness and debauchery, so much of a party city that they actually had a name for this kind of behavior in the first century Mediterranean world. It was called to Corinthianize. The behavior was really pretty despicable, but not just among the pagans. Actually among the Christians as well, and sometimes worse among the Christians than it was among the pagans. You can read about it in the New Testament and blush while you read 1 Corinthians chapters 5 and 6, how a church member is involved in an illicit sexual affair with his stepmother, how Christians are suing one another before the pagan courts, how people from the church are visiting the local brothels with male and female prostitutes. So imagine that you have a job in first century Corinth, and you work hard, and you're a Christian. And one day toward the end of your shift, some of the coworkers are talking to each other about what they're going to do when work gets out. And they invite you to come along, and you're delighted. You want to be part of the group. You don't want to be a social outcast. But you know immediately what all this means. You know that the group is going to head over to the temple district, and they're going to start out drinking temple beer until they're at least high, if not drunk. And then they're going to move from visiting one idol to another. In fact, they may buy some little idols that they will wear on chains around their necks. And then part of the evening will be to visit the prostitutes that are in the temple and in some of the local brothels that are nearby those temples. And, you know, you want to be part of the group. You want to be a Christian. You want to make God look good. You're trying to figure out how all this works. And in your moment of hesitation, one of your coworkers says, hey, it's the money, isn't it? Listen, tell you what, I'll buy dinner. We'll go, and you can pick out the best steak you want, and it'll be cooked to perfection. And you know what that means is, the butchering of an animal that was offered earlier that day to Zeus or Jupiter or to Neptune. And you've got to make a decision. Now, listen to what Paul wrote, who lived and worked in Corinth for 3 years in one of those shops as a tent maker. He said in 1 Corinthians 10:31, that whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. So make your decision on the basis of what will make God look good. And he had a fascinating perspective. He wasn't seeing the offers in front of him or the stresses around him as inevitable evils in a difficult place, but rather he was seeing them as an opportunity to show God, to let people see what God looks like in a place where God typically didn't shine very brightly. Now, was it easy for him? Of course not. It wasn't easy then and there, and it isn't easy here or now. In fact, that type of thing may be the hardest decision and implementation of that decision that any of us may ever face in our work careers. And closely related to all of that is the whole notion that we work to represent God, that these Corinthians were to be ambassadors of Jesus Christ to their workplaces in the city of Corinth. 2 Corinthians 5:20 says, "We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us." So here's the deal. We typically think of ourselves as citizens of earth and citizens of the country in which we were born or to which we were naturalized. But at the moment that a person becomes a Christian, we switch our citizenship and we switch our primary allegiance from earth and our home nation to God and to heaven. So as Christians, we are citizens of heaven. And in that transaction of becoming a Christian and switching citizenship, we also then are reappointed to earth and to the places where we live. We are assigned by God. Not that we any longer belong here, but our assignment is to represent God where we are located and to show the people around us what heaven is like and what an allegiance to God is all about. I suppose you could say that it's sort of like being an ambassador representing the United States of America. So the president appoints an ambassador to a nation, that ambassador is confirmed by the Senate, and then that ambassador goes and lives in another country with another people, but is still an American. May learn another language, but is still an American. May eat the foreign food, but is clearly an American. Treats the people of that culture and that country with dignity and respect, but there is never any doubt that this person is an ambassador of the United States and promotes the policies of this country and of this government. Now, it is true that some ambassadors are given comparatively easy assignments. So the president may appoint an ambassador to Canada or an ambassador to the United Nations. And the U.S. ambassador to the UN actually can live in this country. But there are other ambassadors that are assigned to places like Baghdad or Kabul or Bogota. Those are hard assignments where your family is at risk, where the policy difference, this country's policy differs from the populace of the country in which you serve as an ambassador. And so it's a hardship assignment, but the job, even though threatened and picketed and maybe even surrounded by bombers, is to be an ambassador of the United States. Now, the Bible says, we therefore are Christ's ambassadors. We are the ambassadors of Jesus Christ, not to Kabul or to Bogota or to Baghdad, but we may be his ambassadors to the Minneapolis School District, or to Northwest Airlines, or to Pizza Hut, or to any one of the array of jobs that we have already described. When the United States ambassador to Tokyo gets up in the morning, that ambassador looks in the mirror and says, "Today, I am the ambassador of the United States of America to this place." And as Christians, when we get up in the morning and we look in the mirror and we're getting ready to go to work, we say, "I am the ambassador of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, to the place where I go to work. Or consider a fourth answer to this why work question. And that has to do with fulfilling our calling. Now, that's actually more terminology of an earlier generation than of this 21st century generation. In fact, we used to say in earlier generations, what's your vocation? By that meaning, are you a plumber or a baker or a candlestick maker? What is your vocation? Vocation is the English word that comes from the Latin word for call or for calling. Nowadays, it's used more typically in the religious realm. So in the Roman Catholic Church, a priest or someone who belongs to a religious order has entered one of the vocations. And among Protestants, there may be frequent talk about the call to become a missionary or the call to become a pastor. But that smacks of something dangerous because it somehow implies that this is a better, higher calling from God and that other people in what they do in their jobs is therefore tacitly inferior. And that's simply not true. And that's simply not biblical. The truth is that the way it works is we have the call of Jesus Christ. That is the primary call for every Christian. Jesus says, come on, follow me. And then we say, yes, but Jesus, where do you want me to follow you? And that's when he says, I want you to follow me to this place of work, this employment, this vocation. So it is verbally a yes to follow Jesus, but in terms of acting it out, it is in terms of whatever the job may be. That is the way we tangibly show our yes to the call of Jesus. Now listen to what St. Paul says. Ephesians 4, 1 and 2. He writes, as a prisoner for the Lord, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Now, he wasn't being poetic. This was not a figure of speech. He was a prisoner, literally a prisoner. The year was AD 62. Maybe you've been to Rome as a tourist, and one of the places that your tour guide took you was to the Mamertine prison in Rome, not far from the Forum. And you can go see the spot where Paul was a prisoner. So his job was to be in jail. That is extremely tough work. There were some people who, as Christians, were called to follow Jesus living in some Mediterranean villa. But Paul was called to follow Jesus into a dungeon in downtown Rome. And for us, well, it's the same challenge. That whether it is a delightful or a difficult assignment, we live out the call of Jesus in the call to our job. Another way of saying this is that Jesus has called us to follow him, and we are proving our answer by where we work. And as Christians, we have then gone beyond the verbal yes to the call of Jesus to the actual acting out of that call in our employment. Or if you want to add another answer to the why answers, it is to serve others. Now, most of what we've talked about has been God-centered, and rightly so. It is a list of ways that we can center on God and live for him. But Jesus said in Mark 10:45 that even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Most of our jobs, actually pretty much all of our jobs, are serving other people. So if you are a school teacher, you are serving your students. If you are a salesperson, you are serving your clients. If you are a surgeon, you are serving your patients. If you are a pilot, you are serving your passengers. We are serving others in what we do. So in that regard, we are much like Jesus, simply serving other people. Other people who may be just terrific. They are kind and gracious and encouraging. And when you serve other people, you find that some of them are exceptionally difficult people. They are cantankerous and mean-spirited. They are dysfunctional. They say and do things that make it hard to go to work on the next day. But that's simply part of it. And that is exactly what Jesus faced. There were some who got down and groveled in front of him in worship, and others that spit in his face and called him ugly names. That's part of this business of serving other people. And it is one of the reasons why we work. Now, last on the list is what some people would put first on the list, and that is making a living. It is meeting the practical necessities of life. It is getting money. It is seeking benefits. It's accumulating resources. It's providing for food and for shelter and all the other things that make life livable. It's interesting that the New Testament ties this making of a living to the credibility of a person's Christian faith. Paul writes to Timothy in 1 Timothy 5:8 that if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So somebody who does not work hard, someone who does not provide for family members, has denied being a Christian, has denied the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, is in fact worse than an unbeliever. It is to say that a primary expression of our Christian faith is to make a living. But it's how we think of this. So you can think of it this way, that what we do at work is that we seek to be like God, glorify God, represent God, fulfill our calling, serve others, and get paid for doing it. That's wonderful. Or we can think of it the opposite way, and that is we work to get paid, and maybe if we have time along the way, we could represent God or glorify God. We could be like God. We could serve others. That's not the Christian way. The Christian way is to see that what we do is for God, representing God, serving others, and we get paid for doing it. And that while it looks like the paycheck comes with the imprint of ADP or some local bank, the truth of it is that the paycheck ultimately has the signature of God and is written on the bank of heaven. All of this is to say that our work is very, very important to God. How important? Well, let me give you some statistics, although I know that the statistics don't necessarily prove the case all by itself. But did you know that there are more than 800 references in the Bible to work? And that if you compare that to the references to worship, music, praise, and singing, there are more biblical teachings about work than all the rest combined. And yet, we often think as if worship is mostly about the songs that we sing or the praise that we offer, but at least in the economy of scale, the work that we do is our greatest opportunity to worship God and live out what it means to be a Christian. Or that Jesus appeared 132 times in the New Testament, and 123 of those 132 times were in the marketplace. That a primary teaching tool of Jesus was parables. He taught 52 parables, and 45 of them, that's almost all of them, are work-related. And then if you take the biography of Jesus and calculate that he lived on earth approximately 33 years, three of which were spent in public ministry, the type of things that we think of Jesus doing, like teaching and healing and performing miracles. That was only 10% of his life, three out of 33 years. 90% of his life was spent in the carpenter shop as a child, as an apprentice, eventually as a master carpenter. So, by far, Jesus spent the majority of his life on earth in the workshop as a carpenter. How important is our work to us? It is very important. It is part of our self-identity. And how important is our work to God? It is extraordinarily important. That is to say, then, that when we grasp the answer to the question why, we have come a long way to making work meaningful, not just for us, but for God, and it becomes the primary place and way that we live out what it means to be a Christian. Father, you are a worker, and a hard worker, and a very good worker, and we want to be like you. So I pray your special blessing on every person in every employment that is here represented today, that we may see the jobs that we have as God-given, some easy and some difficult, and that we may be like you in the way we do the work that you have given, and that we may do it for the glory and with the power and the sense of the presence of Jesus Christ himself. Amen. Maybe you grew up hearing the rule that men are never supposed to wear hats in church. Well, let's make an exception for today's faith story with Todd Johnson.
Question. What do baseball caps, wood, and the message of Jesus Christ have in common? Well, nothing, I thought, until God began to bring them all together in my life 14 months ago. But the story really begins 6 years before that, when I began having dreams at night about baseball caps with beautifully wood-shaped bills. At the time, I didn't know why I was having these dreams, but I knew that I had to see if the cap could be made, and if so, if people would want to buy it. So began a long 4-year process, God-led journey, by the way, through the U.S. patent process, the research and development process, the field testing, and finally bringing a new product to market. Thank you. In hindsight, I now see how carefully guided this project was to fit into a larger plan that I was still unaware of. So I finally had a product to sell to the public, and they seemed to like it, and I thought I had finally turned that corner. But we were running into those age-old problems of quality control and unreliable manufacturing. Out of complete frustration, something told me to do something I had promised I would never do. I decided to go overseas to look for a manufacturer for the parts that we needed for our hats. I knew that somehow we needed to find more reliable help in keeping up with the growing demand and yet not sacrifice our quality. While getting ready to go, my wife Sandra noticed that a mission group from Wooddale was going to be speaking on the Sunday that I was leaving. But because I was going to miss the talk, I gave a phone call to Tom Carrill, the Wooddale Worldwide pastor, to discuss my trip to Hong Kong and mainland China and to ask if it was possible for him to help with another idea that Sandra and I had had, and that was to take our business, put it in God's hands, and help provide jobs for people in struggling communities. Well, Sandra and I have always felt the desire to do mission work, but it never seemed to fit, well, let's just call it our limited skill set. But one thing that we do well is we initiate and we improve businesses. We had never figured out how that might help people on the other side of the world, especially in third world countries. So, of course, we thought we had this innovative new idea. And it was. In fact, when we met with Tom Carrill, he said that it was such a great idea that there were people who had been doing it from Wooddale for 15 to 20 years. So now this is last July, 2003. I was 72 hours from getting on a plane to China, and Tom told me that I may want to talk to Dave McCollum, another Wooddale missionary, so that I could listen to some of his 17 years of business history in Asia. Well, by the time I got home from my meeting with Tom, Dave had already called and left me a message. So I couldn't blow him off. We met for coffee. He took a look at our product, and he declared in absolute confidence, "I have just the guy for you to meet in Hong Kong. His name is Brian Royster." And he offered to arrange for Brian to meet me in Hong Kong. Okay, now I'm 30 hours from going on my flight, most important flight of my life. And I get an email from Brian saying, yes, he can meet me in Hong Kong, but he can't find a room because the trade show is so large. So Sandra tells me, of course, well, share your room with him. So now I'm getting on an airplane, biggest trip of my life, and I'm going to have a roommate I've never met in my life. This is how God decided to turn all of my plans upside down. So now let me tell you what happens when you invite Jesus into your daily business plans. We now have a manufacturing facility run by Brian, established in Indonesia, that assembles our caps. We touched the lives of at least 3 other factories in Indonesia placing believers side by side with non-believers on a daily basis. Now, as a businessman, I can do the math, and I know that by providing a fair livable wage, our company supports 7 Indonesian families for a full year for every 10,000 caps that we ship back to America. And this wage allows them to only have to hold one job instead of 2 or 3. More importantly, though, I know that every day that we have our products made in Indonesia, God will use our business to spread the message of Jesus Christ to people that are hungry for it. And I know that every day that I have Jesus as my business partner, I can know joy in every circumstance I have, both business-wise and personally. Thank you.